Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, yeah, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
We welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Missing Pages of History is a program dedicated to the upliftment of underserved communities. We seek to inspire you and our communities to do better because we know they can do better. We hope to play a role in aiding our communities to do better by filling in our missing pages of history that has been omitted from the history books. Here is today, we come into your homes, but we would like to have a candid discussion with our community around the issue of music, music of the past. Did we get the message? This is one of our missing pages, and we'd like to have your discussion and your input and your dialogue on this theme. Music of the past, did we get the message? One of our missing pages. But before we get started on this particular theme, what we would like to do, as always, we'd like to introduce one of our contributors and members, Sister Susie. She will come in and share with you some Black mini facts. Sister Susie, welcome to Missing Pages of History.
Good evening. Because this particular show is dealing with music, I'd like to give you some mini facts involving African music that we've had in the past and the present, the actual individuals who created this different music to give it a part of our history. Okay, first we got jazz, which is an African-American musical form born out of the blues, ragtime, and marching bands, originated in Louisiana during the turn of the 19th century. The word jazz is a slang term that at one point they referred to as a sexual act. Okay, and the second mini fact that I have is involving Chuck Berry, who just recently passed at the age of 90. And he's memorable for his songs involving cars, girls, and wild dance parties. But his famous Duck Walk, which he originated in 1956, which his whole attempt was to hide the wrinkles in his trousers by shaking them out of his now signature body movements. That's a brief history of Chuck Berry, who just recently passed this month, earlier part of this month. The third musical fact is about our friend and musical partner Tammy Terrell, who died of brain tumor, which left Marvin Gaye grieving. And he recorded his first hit single, What's Going On, having Detroit Lions athletes Lim Barney and Mel Farley down vocals for the song's intro. Gaye later met with the Lions coach Joe Smith to propose the ideal plan for them, which unfortunately Smith turned them down. And our last final Black history fact involving music is at the very peak of his fame, rock and roll pioneer Little Richard concluded that his music was the devil's work and subsequently became a traveling preacher, focusing on gospel tunes. When the Beatles revived several of his songs in 1964, Little Richard to return to the rock stage. And that's some brief historical facts regarding music with the African Americans.
Yeah, I've been listening to one of our contributors, remember, Sister Susie. We had just shared with you some of our many Black facts, and we hope that you will take heed to this history, because many times when we talk about history, in essence, we are talking about his story. And what we want to do at Missing Pages is to tell our stories. What we also want to do is bring Susie back. Susie, before we get started on our theme today, Music of the Past, then we get the message, which is one of our Missing Pages. Can you share with our listening audience some of the upcoming activities concerning Missing Pages of History?
Okay, I'd like the audience to be reminded that we extended our quarterly raffle fundraising drawing, which is to be held on Saturday, April the 15th at 1 o'clock. We are 1 week. And also to remind our listeners that we have our MPH show from Comcast Channel 35 and Files Channel 36, which starts in September, and it's on a Wednesday, and it's from 9 to 10 p.m. This will be a weekly show, and we also we have live call-ins where you can call in. And we also, MPH has its T-shirt and cap drive. It's still continued. If you'd like to support us, you can go to our website at www.mph.org and order your T-shirt cap. And our last and final thing, we always have our biweekly radio program that's on Saturdays, and that's at 1 o'clock. And the next one will be April the 22nd, 2017. And We ask for your support in listening to us. Thank you.
And to Susie's last comment concerning Missing Pages of History, our next official show will be on the 27th, but we will have a special show coming up on April the 15th. That's when we'll be doing our quarterly raffle drawing. Yes, our upcoming raffle will be April the 15th at 1 p.m. right at this station. For all our supporters, plan givers, and friends, please, if you have not purchased your tickets, please do so, and it will be next week at 1 o'clock where we will announce our winners. So, Susan, we'd like to thank you for the information. And to our listening audience, what we would like to do right now, we have various people from our communities throughout the country. They have decided to call in to share their views and opinion on the theme today, which is music of the past. Did we get the message right? One of our missing pages. And what we're going to do today, listen, audience, we'd like for you to also participate by calling in at 818-337-0016 and share your views and your perspectives on the various music that we have chosen today and to talk about this particular theme, its relevance to our community back in the past as well as today. And to get started with this, what we're going to do right now is we're going to bring in some of the participants, and we'd like to welcome them. And what we're going to do is we'd like to get their first perspective on their opening today. Their opening today was Wake Up Everybody by Teddy Pendergrass. There are some things I'd like to raise about or discuss about this particular record and this music, what it meant in the past, and how does it apply to today's world. But before we do that, I would like to get each one of our participants general feedback on this whole question of how do they perceive the role of music in a society? How do they perceive the role of the artists? Do artists have a responsibility to contribute to the upliftment of their community? Because I noticed today, if you look at a lot of our artists today, the type of music that is being produced is not music that is productive. When I'm saying productive, I mean it's not music that geared towards raising the consciousness of our people and getting them to elevate themselves to a state where they will be start doing more positive things in terms of developing our community from a positive perspective and not be so sort of destructive and negative. So in terms of my participants today, I bring in Brother Anthony, I would like to generally get your consensus on what is your perspective on the role of music, the role of artists. Do they have an obligation to the community to help uplift the community? If so, why? Or if not, why not? Brother Anthony?
Yes, they do. Just as any other occupation, you know, the people whether you're talking about the sciences, engineering, art, education, they have an obligation to help uplift the people, because it is from the people where they get their skills from. And I think that's something that's overlooked, that the skills that an individual acquire, they acquire because of the sacrifices of the people around them, their teachers, their communities, parents, relatives, what have you. So any artist, as in any other occupation, they have an obligation to use their skills to uplift the community. I feel that a lot of contemporary artists feel content to merely reflect what's going on in the community, but not really, try to raise people's consciousness to a higher level, which is what Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes tried to do with this particular song.
Okay, those views that were expressed were from Brother Anthony. He is based out of the community out of New Jersey. And now we bring in one of our youth, Brother Maurice, I believe is out of Richmond, Virginia. Brother Maurice, welcome to Missing Pages of History. As a youth, Brother Maurice, and many people may perceive the youth today, when we think about music, one of the first things that comes to mind probably hip hop. What is your position as a youth? How do you view music today? How do you view the role of artists? And do artists have a responsibility to uplift their community?
The answer to that, first of all, greetings to everyone, and thank you for having me on the show today. And the question to whether or not do hip-hop artists have a responsibility, yes, they do. Because hip-hop started out as a movement. For us, you know, but you got Public Enemy, you have KRS-One, just to name a few. So as artists of today, yes, and some artists are taking the responsibility, but they are not. You don't hear them on mainstream radio. You have the same old this other type of what they call trap music, this whole party and sexual exploitation type of music. That's the mainstream. That's what you hear on the mainstream. But you do have underground artists. You do have people like J. Cole and people like Big Crit who are really speaking truth to power. But you don't, even on a, not to be long-winded, but even on old school, on 105.7, just to name a few mainstream stations, you don't hear Fela Kuti, you don't hear Bougie Bonton, you don't hear Curtis Mayfield, you don't hear those type of music. You always hear, you know, the opposite, the music about partying, sex, baby-making music, if you will. So that's my contribution to your question.
Thank you, Brother Maurice. We'll go to the city, the Chocolate City. Brother Moses, we welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Brother Moses, one of the things when we think about the Chocolate City, when we talk about the industry of music, that city has been given credit for creating this concept of music they call the go-go. What is your position on this whole question of music, the role of artists, and its responsibility to their community and their people?
Well, first of all, I say we have to be about something, and that something is revolution, the establishment of scientific socialism. And in that regard, music, as Mao Zedong said, art should serve the people and serve the revolution. You know, these artists and musicians are cultural workers. And books, art, you know, all of it should serve the needs of the people in terms of the need for revolution. And that's, it's from that perspective that we must observe, criticize these artists. Go-go is originated in D.C. and it's basically, there are some more conscious elements within the go-go movement, but generally speaking, it's a party. And anyway, I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses, from out of the Chocolate City, Washington, D.C. We now will take you to the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia. We have with us Brother McHale, who has worked in the industry. Brother McHale, welcome to Missing Page of History. Actually, as a music producer, Brother McHale, what is your position on this question of the role of music, the role of the artist as relates to the responsibility of its people and its community? Do they have one, or are they free to do as they please? You know, a lot of times
we argue about this issue of individual freedom.
Yes, go ahead, Brother
McHale. This is
McHale,
Philadelphia Roundtable. I've been in the music field for most of my life, I guess. Not in a heavy way, but in and around the industry. And when you take a good look at the progression of our music here in the United States, what you see is you come from a normal or natural music to being compromised by the industry itself. So that when Philly International, which is the label that produced Teddy Pendergrass and that particular record, was formed, it was formed during that time when we were just making our own music. It rose to become something like a Motown and dominated the music scene for a long time. But there came a point in time after disco and so forth that kind of music was essentially shut down. And this is an industry thing. Disco lasted 4 or 5 years and then it was just out. There was a movement to do that. And it was partly a jealous thing. So now what you have is rather than black radio, you have urban radio. The FCC changed a few laws so you can say anything on a record now. and the people that are financing the industry have no real relationship to the people themselves. So what you see with a lot of these artists are people, and an artist has to eat by performing, recording, etc. So now you have an influence of a large sums of money to commercialize what was natural. And that's the general problem for our people anyway, whether it's food, clothing, or shelter. It's been commercialized to the point that it's become toxic. And while you do have some artists that remain true, and that's because of that's who they are, there are other artists who are being promoted because they are commercially viable. And that has no regard to the moral or well-being of the people that listen to that particular style of music. So we see that the industry has been the dominant four factor in changing the music. And until we get control of our artists ourselves, that's going to be pretty much the scenario. Okay.
Okay, you said something very interesting, but I'll come back with your point, with that last point you just made, which I think is very interesting. But we'll right now go to Richmond, Virginia, bringing Brother Hackey. Brother Hackey, what is your take on music of the past? Did we get the message? What is the role of music? What is the role of the audience? Do they have responsibility to the community and to their people? If not, why not? Why can't they just be an individual and be freedom to do as they please, as long as they're not violating any kind of legal laws?
Well, brother, you know, the thing I think you're asking is somewhat complex. There is no question, historically, when you look at the role of African music, clearly it's been geared toward the elevation, you know, of the African condition. So in that context, African music has always been concerned about the plight of African people in society. Whether we're talking about the origin of spiritual music, we talk about blues, rock and roll, whatever it is, rap music, whatever it is. So historically, we do have a responsibility in terms of community. But what's happening, I think, the brothers prior to me, you know, pretty much enumerated, is that this question is the coin of commercialism. I think that, you know, as long as this mindset exists, where it's all about the dollar bill, which is certainly being popularized in popular media, then young people are going to tend to gravitate toward that which provide dollars for them. I had the opportunity on several occasions to speak to some hip hop artists, and a martial artist. In the first case, I had the opportunity to speak to a brother who was with X-Clan. X-Clan was a very progressive group, very revolutionary in terms of the message, very positive. I spoke to the brother while I was working at Sony, and I'm asking him, so how's it going with the deal, you know, with Sony? And the brother was like, well, you know what, man? He said, listen, it's very difficult to get a deal because what they want us to do, they want us to sing about ridiculous kinds of stuff. They don't want us to talk about consciousness-raising kind of music. And so, therefore, we're not going to do that, so it looked like we won't get that contract. So the brother was true to his roots. I also had the opportunity to speak to brother, the Black Dragon, Ron Van Cleef. I ran to him in the Village in New York, and was asking him about, man, what happened to you, man? What happened to, you know, the few black martial artists they had starting their own movies? He said, well, man, the industry made a decision, man. They got rid of us. I said, well, it was unprofitable? He said, no, it was very profitable. I said, so why did they get rid of you? He said, brother, he said, that's a political question. He said, you know, that's something, you know, that, you know, they can best answer, but I suspect that it has a lot to do in terms of imagery of African people, actually seeing African people in positive roles, seeing them control their own destiny was not a message that was palatable to those in power. So this is a quintessential problem that we're going to find out with. And until we reclaim our value system, which says that, you know, we have a right to exist on this planet, I suspect that a lot of our young brothers and sisters are going to be promoting music, which is deleterious to the overall advancement of our people. So that's fundamentally, I think, a problem we're confronted with.
Okay, Brother Hackey. And to all of our participants who's on this line, I would just make a general statement about some of the issues that were expressed in the music, Wake Up Everybody by Teddy Pendergrass. Now, we know that this record was produced about 20, 30 years ago. And during that time period, he spoke about the relationship between war and poverty. He spoke about the backwards thinking of the people and the new way of thinking. He spoke about this question that we cannot continue to lay in bed. We must get up. and do something. And he made a real profound statement. He stated that if we let things just be, then there will be no change. So my question to the panelists, when the artist is sending out a message, do we or did we really get the message? Did we get the message from this particular artist when he wrote the song "Wake Up Everybody," looking at when it was produced in the past to what's going on today? Can I get some dialogue for my participants? Anyone would like to start off with that?
This is Mikhail out of Philadelphia. I think one thing to look at is the context of that particular time period. Depending on how old you are, you may remember that era in Philadelphia that was Philly International. And you look at the people involved with that, they are coming from a particular background. And matter of fact, in that particular time period, a lot of groups were oriented towards what the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. And so you had groups in the 60s and 70s, that Kool and the Gang, so forth, that were supported by that group and subscribed to those principles. And it was because of that, it was very easy to put out that kind of music. So for that entire time period, you're getting uplifting music because that is the will of the people. And we were in control of our music. Even if we don't control the distribution back then, we're in control of the studio, the lyrics, and the production. And that's what we've lost. We don't really control that. It came a time when that particular label no longer viable financially or because of the industry to continue with that particular music. And so it basically shut down, became a catalog, and other things were able to be done because of that. But that was the end of that particular era. And that was around the time of the birth of hip-hop, which if you think about the early records, some were party records. And some were, like, say, for instance, you take Run DMC. It's like that you know, they spoke about things as they were. You take another artist, let's say, like Rakim, who's from the 5% school of thought, and he asked some harder questions. So when you get to X-Clan and Public Enemy, we're coming basically from those perspectives rather than a commercial or pop perspective. And that's what we got now, pop music. It's controlled by other folks, and they're making plenty of money from it, and that's their goal. So the moral factor is completely forgotten. But that's my particular take on that.
Anyone else would like to take a stab at it?
I would. I agree with Brother Mikhail. He is correct. That song, "Wake Up Everybody," came out in the early 70s, rough around 74, 75. And there was a heightened amount of political activity going on during that particular time period in Philadelphia and other areas where there were large concentrations of Africans. When the artists were, weren't too widely recognized commercially, they produced a wider variety of music, and it came from the people, so to speak. As it became more popularized and music became a bigger business and got taken over by large corporations, it lost a lot of its educational power, so to speak, in my opinion, and became exclusively party music. And this coincides with the flooding of drugs into the African community to undermine the growing militancy of the youth during that time period, and that continues to this day. And And I think the developments in the music industry kind of like parallel that.
You know, Brother Maurice and Haki, when we look at that song, one of the first things he alluded to was relationship between wealth and poverty. You say, well, this song was produced again 20, 30 years ago. It seems like we are living the same reality today with this coordination between the very walls that this government is taking on and the increase of poverty among the people here throughout the world. Will y'all speak to that issue? Why has the essence of that, the message, has not been received 30, 40 years later?
I can take a stab at it. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Can you ask that question one more time?
Ted Pilgrim mentioned Wake Up Everybody in that song. He alluded to the correlation between poverty and war. And we had the same phenomenon going on today, escalation of wars with the increase of poverty. My question is, did we really get that message? This was 34 years ago, and we're still going through the same cycle again. How do you explain those dynamics?
Well, it's a yes or no answer. The people of the community and our communities, I believe, like people like us who are on the front lines in our communities fighting and having platforms like this, we got the answer. That's an easy yes. But the people who are in power, of course, and also the people who, not on the national front, but also on the local front, people who are in power, political power in the state and also in the city, they didn't get the answer because they still are doing things, the prison, the pipeline, schools. I work in the field with youth, in the mentoring field. All our students who look like yourself and myself and many others on this panel, they only have three things to look forward to. Jail, or the army, the military. So, I mean, you know, the people who are in power who have the power to transform the funding from military spending towards social programming. And that's what Dr. Martin Luther King spoke about when he talked about the triple evils, you know, militarism, poverty, and also, I forgot the third one. Somebody can help me out. But militarism, power, militarism, poverty, and also racism, the three evils that he spoke about. And in this country, even not only with Donald Trump, our present president, also with President Barack Obama, he had $100 million drone base in Niger, in Africa. AFRICOM, why is AFRICOM is in Africa? You understand what I'm saying? So the answer to your question, why we have an AFRICOM? AFRICOM is a United States-based military base in Africa. Why are the United States in Africa in the first place? Resources, right? But I'm sorry for my tangent, but I'm passionate about these issues. So to get back to your question, Brother Lee, I would have to say yes, majority of Africans on the continent and also in the United States of America, I would say yes, we got that answer. But the people who are in power, they heard that message, and people who have funding and have the resources, they heard the message, but they decided to say no to it.
Lucky, your response?
Well, the question in terms of war and poverty is one which I think is very germane. I think it's one that his brother alluded to that's very clear among those of us who are least conscious. But I think the brother made a point in terms of the negativity in terms of the masses of people. And clearly the masses of people doesn't understand necessarily the complexities of the system. And one of the things that we're talking about serious end to poverty in this world, in this country, do we have to seriously look at the role of capitalism in terms of facilitating all this injustice, all this poverty that we're talking about? So I think one of the problems is there's a real reprehension among many to even critique capitalism. In other words, this notion that somehow that it's the greatest system in the world, I think is reigning supreme in the mind of lots of people. So I think that has to be discarded. I mean, this notion in terms that capitalism is a great system, and look at it for what it is. And so when we talk about the kind of wars that exist throughout the world, I mean, the question asks, then why the wars? But clearly, Syria hasn't did anything to the United States. So why is the United States bombing Syria? Well, there's a reason why the United States is bombing Syria, and it has to do with, it's not, it has nothing to do with altruism. It has more to do in terms of corruption and greed. So the idea that you're going to bomb this nation into submission, partition it with the Kurds up north and the Shia down south, elevate corrupt leadership for the sole purpose of controlling. So the purpose of all the resources that exist in Syria now becomes the domain of the West. So clearly, we talk about proliferation of poverty. Given that arrangement, that's very, very clear. But people should not think for one second that the poverty that we're talking about is only exists around the world. We're talking about poverty right here in America. So in the more industrial nations, America is the only country in the industrialized world which poverty is so rapid. But poverty among Western nations is increasing, and this is a direct relationship in terms of capitalism, in terms of how it's fundamentally structured. And so without a fundamental restructuring of the world's global economy, then the kind of poverty, the mass suffering that you're talking about, is not going to decrease, it's going to increase. And so this is the fundamental problem we're talking about. So I think that people have to begin to critique capitalism and see capitalism what it is, and begin to take heed in countries like Cuba, Venezuela, who are doing great things in terms of the socialist principle, which says that human beings are more important than profit. So, but until we get to that mindset, I think we acquiesce, we carte blanche support for all of those kind of military maneuvers, strategic strategies that are implemented by the West under the guise that what they're doing is good for us, and not understanding that the more they create war, the more we exacerbate our own poverty. So this is the question, this is the fundamental question that everyone has to ask themselves.
If I may, Brother Lee, I wanted to piggyback to add just more comments to connect, make a connection between capitalism, imperialism, and also with music. If I may,
yes, you may go on.
Okay. I just don't want to be courteous of other panelists' time. My whole thing is, we talked about some of the artists early, along with Teddy Pendergrass. But you have, you know, people like Fela Kuti of Gil Scott-Heron, who also spoke about, and also Buju Banton, Bob Marley, the list goes on, who spoke out against, musically, against these type of different, you know, capitalism, imperialism, and also colonialism and slavery. All of these things are connected, and all of the musicians I named, they spoke out about it, but you don't really hear it today on, you know, on you know, mass media, and it's a reason for that. There's a reason for that, you know, that the masses do not hear about it. But I would say when it was out and when it was popular in their time when they was performing, I feel like back then, I guess in the 60s and 70s, I feel like majority of their fans was, you know, they was more aware of the issues of capitalism and imperialism and wars that was going on predominantly among us and the African community. But it's a reason that you don't hear it today, because they want the other messages of partying and you know, alcoholism and all these other things to fit in, to keep the masses blind and keep them, you know, subjugated while they are continuing their mission of imperialism and capitalism. So I just wanted to bring that point into play. Thank you.
Let me piggyback on that real quickly, and this will be very, very short. The question that the brother raises in terms of is just intentionally, stealing the culture, and therefore, you know, changing the fundamental tenets of that culture for the sole purpose of ensuring that people think a certain way. I think it's important that people understand this whole concept of agnotology is very, very real. This notion in terms of, you know, co-opting culture, in terms of making sure that you deceive the people, is something very real. And I think it's something they've been very successful in terms of infiltrating music and, you know, and corrupting the musicians to create that kind of music, which is antithetical to the existence of African people on this planet. So I think that the point that the brother made is a very, very germane point, a very, very good point. And I think that people need to look up this whole concept in terms of agnotology and understand all it means in their lives.
This is Mikael. I'd like to jump in right here. Anybody see that flick that recently came out, Get Out?
Yeah. Yes, we did.
Okay,
I saw it.
Okay, now, I love the flick. It had a lot going on in it. Think about the scene where they kept hypnotizing the brother, and he was sinked down into that, I guess it was like a star kind of a situation. And every time he comes back out, they try to put him back under. Pretty much what you got going on with our situation here. Our black radio became urban radio in the late, I guess, early 80s. That was an FCC thing. And that's when that big change, because you used to hear Fela Ransom Cootie, you used to hear Last Poets on black radio. And that black radio concept was basically, I'd say that started in the late 60s, late 60s. And there was a brother named Frankie Crocker out of New York. He came up with a format which combined gospel, soul, blues, jazz, African music, reggae. And he took that format and spread it across the country. That was the birth of black radio. Prior to that period, we'd had a lot of love records. And if you think about back when Marvin Gaye's Mercy, Mercy Me and, you know, those records were coming out, there was a lot of pushback from Motown Records. They didn't really want to go there because it was maybe commercially risky. So those are things to keep in mind. These are the same problems that we have right now with urban radio and the pushing of a fashion and a culture that's somewhat manufactured. When you're 13, 14, 15 years old, you're really kind of open for a lot of ideas and you don't have a lot of experience or understanding. So if that becomes if the music is directing your thinking, then they got you right where they want you, unless you control the music. Okay.
Okay, we will have to stop right there and let our listening audience know that you're listening to Missing Pages of History. Our theme today is on Music of the Past. Did we get the message? One of our missing pages. We are talking to various individuals from various communities on this theme. We always welcome your call in at 818-337-0016 to give your views and your perspective. What we're going to do right now, we're going to continue to travel down this road of music, and we're going to go to our sister Whitney Houston when she wrote the song Teach the Children. When we come back, we'll speak on Did We Get the Message? That's right. They can't take away our dignity. When we talk about, did we get the message from the song? I'll start off with Susie. Susie, when you listen to the lyrics and the message of this song, how would you apply the message then when we're reduced to presently the reality that the youth is living today?
I refer to it because when you think about it, white teachers and black teachers have different expectations for our black kids. And the thing of it is that blacks have Africans have a tendency that, you know, we want to encourage our kids and promote them with whatever they decide to do, regardless of what it is. But you have white teachers put in their school system to make us feel, to make the kids feel low and that they can't accomplish things and stuff like that. And the thing about Whitney's song is the thing about it, just to even listen to it, it would lift a youth up. But the thing about it, the youth of today, I mean, Wendy's okay, but they're not looking for what she's really putting out in the message. So, you know, therefore, you know, music can play a part, but we need to take songs like this and reintroduce them to the youth to be able to give them a chance to have tell us their opinions or what's it really saying in that song. But it's just that we're just lacking in a lot of things, and what they're doing, they're putting white folks in to teach our kids. That's all I
got
to say.
You know, Anthony and then Moses, when we talk about the youth, they said teach them a new way. Give them a sense of dignity. Give them a sense that they can believe they can achieve. And more importantly, she talks about them being their own role model. From that message, how can we make that reality today, Brother Anthony and Brother Moses?
Well, you know, actually, I see a certain similarity in terms of a new way of thinking that Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes alluded to in Wake Up, and that is the idea that it starts with you, but it starts with the individual, each of us. Asserting our dignity, having our self-worth, but we have to work together. And I think and that message has to be conveyed by us. In other words, it starts with us, and we have to spread it to the generation that's coming up behind us. And I think that's the most critical message in that song, that what we have learned during the course of our life, we have to pass on to those brothers and sisters that are coming up behind us. And that's how we've survived historically. Our ancestors always passed it on to the next generation. I mean, she is absolutely correct. The children are our future. But a lot of times we lose sight of that because a lot of us are trapped in a subsistence and slave mentality, and we live just for today only.
Brother Moses, your response to this song and this message?
As Bob Marley said, the biggest person you ever did see was once a baby. We all have to learn from our parents, our teachers, the adults around us, but we have to see, we have an inner morality or inner calling, which says, you know, we have to stay true to ourselves and believe in what we're about, and, you know, to love ourselves. I think, you know, for me, like during the 60s, when I was in high school, I began to love myself more because of the Cultural Revolution that was going on. I wore a dashiki to school, and my white algebra trig teacher was white, and he sent me to the office for wearing a dashiki. So, you know, we have to learn to love ourselves and not be lost with the hype of the ruling class's ideology. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Bella. Well, Brother Haki and then Bella Maurice, I'd like for you to respond to. In that message, she said something that I thought was very important. She stated that no matter what they say to me, they can't take away my dignity, which I think is very powerful and something that we need to begin to shift and look at as it relates to our youth development. We are living in a time period now in which everything that is African, is black, is coming under attack. We are looking at also at this period of time, everything that African people may have contributed to humanity, people now begin to say, we have not. So how do we take that message from that particular song and make sure our youth are imbued with a certain sense of well-being that no one can take that dignity from them? How do we do that, Brother Haki?
Well, you know, one of the things that we have to be very candid in terms of our discussion when we talk about Neil's kind of a theory. One of the things, as Brother McKay alluded to earlier, when we talk about young people, they're particularly vulnerable to all kinds of suggestions. And so we got to be real when we talk about we live in the context of a system which is essentially across the board anti-African. And so all the information that the kids see, everything they hear, everything they read is geared toward the negation of the African being. So therefore, we have to realize that reality is that they're going to inculcate, they're going to internalize a lot of these values. And that's where we're clear in terms of when we look at the kind of self-destruction, this kind of self-hatred as manifests itself in terms of young brothers and sisters killing and beating each other up over the most trivial things. So I think that to answer your question, I think, you know, one of the things, if we're going to seriously entertain the idea in terms of, you know, empowering brothers and sisters to the point where the propaganda society doesn't impact on them, then we have to talk about the role of institutions. Because without the institutions, it's not going to happen. And, of course, the problem with institutions is that we have to be on the same accord. So the problem is that, you know, these kind of discussions that need to take place in terms of the evolution of institutions in the community are often very fractured, in the sense that people have different ideas in terms of what they perceive as quote-unquote important or what they perceive as achievable. So we have to have these discussions, you know, to get past the most esoteric of concerns, to get to the meat of the matter, which is, you know, institutions, which is to empower people to feel good about who they are. But it takes institutions to do that. So without the institutions, we can't conceivably create the culture or as sociologists say, the milieu which says, that you are important, you are somebody that you're capable of being X, Y, and Z, and that, you know, no matter what anybody say, that, you know, that you understand who you are, you understand your greatness, you understand what's achievable for you, and you understand your commitment to your community. Those things can only be achieved through organization. And unfortunately, at this point in history, you know, we're still trying to facilitate, you know, even some kind of discussion around organization, because we still got a lot of sectarianism that exists among political organizations, and the refusal for people to come together and have these critical discussions. But fuck the white people. Forgive my French. But fuck them. Those liberal white folks and their bullshit. Fuck that. I'm talking about African people, you know, who say they're really concerned about the plight of African people. We have to come together and have these discussions. And unless we can have these discussions in the question in terms of organizational building, institutions, it really becomes futile. So if we're really sincere about this, and we have to come together, and I'll close it there.
Brother Maurice, have a chance to work with our youth. How do we create conditions to instill in them that other folks cannot take away their dignity? How do we address that question?
I got you. I just, Brother Haki, he laid out the answer cut and clear, but I just want to add on to, in order to get to organization let me be more specific. In order to get to organizations, in order to get to institutions, I feel like events like your platform is allowing for the community to come out. I feel like more events need to be more community events that's open to our community. And I agree with Haki. Fuck the white people. Fuck the liberalists. We don't need them, the liberals. We don't need them along in our organization or with planning for our survival and for our determination. They can go do that in the racist whites neighborhood where they have Confederate flags. They need to go organize those white folks and not come into black communities to try to organize us. Let us do our own damn work. But I feel like in order for the message that Whitney Houston stated, can't take away our dignity, and to prolong that with our youth, I feel like we have to have more community events. I'm working with some other activists who call themselves activists in the community, black activists who are trying to have a platform for the mothers who lost their children to violence, for the mothers to come out and for black people to come out to speak. And don't want to be on no, we want attention, we want media attention. No, we want the community attention and our youth. And it starts with black youth. And I try to, what I do with my mentees and with the black brothers and sisters I work with, I try to, because I'm still, you know, getting familiar with the position, and I got to abide by Whitey rules or my supervisor rules, but I try to introduce them to African culture and try to introduce them to uplifting, you know, music and uplifting types of media and cartoons of that sort. I try to provide them with milestone media comic books, images of black superheroes, Icon, Static Shock, and the list goes on and on, Black Panther with Marvel Comics. I try to introduce them to stuff that catches their attention and that have a message, the important message and important food that they need to think right, to have a dignity that nobody can take away from. So that's what I would add to that.
Thank you, Brother Maurice, to our listening audience. This is Missing Pages of History. We are discussing the theme today, music of the past. Did we get the message? One of our missing pages. Always, we encourage you to call in at 818-337-0016. Missing Pages of History comes on biweekly from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, U.S. time. We also would like to just share with you again that next week on the 15th of April, we'll be doing our quarterly fundraising raffle drawing contest, which will be next week on the 15th at 1 p.m. So please tune in. But what we're going to do right now, we can go over a few more minutes and we still have some time left. We can ask our participants if they can hold on for a little bit while longer, and then we'll be closing our program. But again, Miss Page of History is a program and an organization that is dedicated to the upliftment of underserved communities. We're talking about you. We cannot be no more stronger than you are. So therefore, if you want to know more about our organization and come help build this organization, we encourage you to go to our website. You'll find all the information that's needed by going to www.mphinc.org. Now, let's continue the discussion. Kale, what I'd like to do is see if you'd like to have any comments as relates to Whitney Houston theme, this whole question around the youth. Any comments that you would like to share with our listening audience on this particular song?
This is Mikhail. I enjoyed the song. I do think that it's actually older than that, older than was performed before Whitney Houston. But either way, the message is on point. But here's the thing. To create that environment means creating your own environment. I've been attending some community meetings here in Philadelphia, and some of the meetings have been mixed. And as you said, the liberal Europeans don't have a solution for us, and I don't think that's I don't think a solution is intended from any of their sociological, political, et cetera. It's only designed to kind of patch up a little bit of a problem, to placate people, etc. If we examine our history in this country and beyond, we can see that we've been able to do for self at various points, and that's when we made the most progress. If we look at some of the leadership that we've had over time and study what they studied, we'll be able to work with each other on a much deeper level, because all, actually all these people, as controversial as some of these people may be, they were all connected as you go back to the 1930s, 20s, the late 1800s. Certain information came out that they will never put in that classroom concerning our people and our function in the, on the entire planet. We weren't just relegated to the African continent. We ran the planet at various points in time and have lost that position. If you look around the world, you'll see that there are black people with afros in the Pacific, southern parts of the Asian continent. You read about Ivan Van Sertima. You see we were over here. So the concept has to be broadened, and we have to begin to work to build our own. Here in Philadelphia, working on a concept called Plus Schools, where you would have a community outlet, maybe some computers, and you could actually teach your history to your people without regards for what's accepted by the mainstream. So it's that kind of a movement that is necessary. For our people, poverty has become a way of life. When they said fair, welfare is farewell, that's a lot of the problem we see. Generational poverty becomes because of a lack of transmission of how to succeed. When our people came up from the South to the major cities, it was as if we were becoming immigrants into the American society, and we've been knocked back a few times since then. But we had made progress, not from so much as poverty programs, but from our own teaching out each other. We set up schools in the South when there were no schools, and we produced doctors and lawyers. So we've got work to do, and we got to get past our denominational differences. Okay.
Okay, at this point in time, as we stated earlier, our theme today is Music of the Past. Did we get the message? One of our missing pages. What we're going to do right now is we're going to go to our next music selection. And this one of the things about this particular song and the next couple of songs coming up, we understand that scientifically speaking, wherever there is oppression, there's resistance. And resistance comes in different forms. One of the forms that African people or black people have always used as a tool of resistance is our music. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to Bob Marley. He wrote the song Get Up and Stand Up, and we'll come back and continue the dialogue. Let's go to the song Get Up and Stand Up.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up.
Preacher man, oh, tell me, heaven is on the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter goes.
Get up.
to heaven in a Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you
we gonna
do?
Stand up for a
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better get
up. Stand up
in the morning.
Give it up.
Stand up for your
right. Stand up right now.
Get up. Stand up. Don't give up the fight.
We'd like to welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. We'll continue our dialogue this evening as we discuss music of the past till we get the message from one of our missing pages. Well, you were just listening to Bob Marley, his song Get Up and Stand Up. I think some artists, when they made or created their music, they were speaking particularly to a particular audience. And they were very clear in terms of who they were speaking to. When he wrote the song Get Up and Stand Up, I'm quite sure he was speaking to all those who are being oppressed, and particularly African people. Now, when we say get up and stand up for our rights, get up, stand up, don't give up the fight. When we hear those words, when he created them then, and when we look at our reality today, to Brother Haki and Brother Moses, are our people getting up and standing up? Did they hear that message?
I'm sorry, say again.
I said, are our people, did our people hear the message, get up and stand up? Are our people getting up and standing up for their rights? Bob Marley stated, this is the only way you will bring about change, if we get up and stand up and fight for our rights. Where are we today when it comes to this message? What is your analysis of that?
Well, I think one of the problems is one of socialization. I think that the more that our people internalize the message that's being permeated, you know, by the television, by popular media, then less likely we get the message to get up to stand up. I think the assumption is that, in fact, that the problem that exists in African Union has more to do not so much with a system in place, which facilitates those problems, but defective people. So I think, to a large extent, our people have actually internalized the notion that, in fact, we are defective. I think one of the great ironies is that you have middle-income folks who are well-educated, quote-unquote educated, folks who have a high standard of living, but yet have no fundamental understanding whatsoever in terms of the plight of their own people. And so of course, we understand the role in terms of class, in terms of shaping, you know, such perceptions. But on a much deeper level, I think when you fundamentally look at this and you see a disproportionate number of people who are affected by a system, inevitably it seems to me at some point you have to call into question exactly what's the system doing to the people and how is the system doing it to the people. So it seems to me those kind of questions become immediate in your minds. But the mere fact that they don't become immediate in so many people who are middle income suggests that they have internalized the notion that, in fact, the problem with African people is one that's self-inflicted. In other words, African people, there's something fundamentally wrong with African people, and so therefore any suffering that they happen to endure is a result of their own inadequacies. So I think that as far as the question in terms of get up, stand up, first, at some point, we have to begin to self-actualize. And at that point, when we begin to understand, you know, who we are, our contributions, you know, our right to exist on this planet, I think at that point, then we begin to naturally ask the question, you know, is it time to get up and stand up? I don't think we're at that point yet. We're still fighting this question in terms of the subjective, and which is, you know, in terms of how we see ourselves. So I think without a clarity in terms of who we are, I think it's very difficult to get to the question in terms of get up, stand up. Because after all, the get up, stand up encompasses quite a bit of self-esteem, quite a bit of character, quite a bit of principle. And one of the things capitalism is a very good thing. It eradicates any principle. It eradicates any sense of self-worth. It eradicates any sense of you can do for self. So I think that we have to overcome those obstacles in terms of get to the point where you start asking questions, it's time to get up and stand up.
Brother Moses, what is your assessment? Did we get the message? All our people getting up and standing up for their rights. Are we not giving up the fight? What's your assessment on that, Brother Moses?
Well, we have got up and stood up because we wouldn't be faced with a Donald Trump right now. But, you know, we're learning from our experiences and hopefully we're getting organized. That's the bottom line. If we're getting organized in order to overcome this situation and to, because nothing reactionary falls in the Southern Court, it has to be toppled. And, you know, we can't just stick our heads in the sand and say, you know, it doesn't matter who's running the country and expect to really be able to fight back this machine that's of all power, not all powerful, but powerful machine known as the government of the United States of America. And so we have to somehow wake up to the reality that we need to deal with this political machine. And like I said, not to reactionary falls on the court, has to be topical. So we've got to get organized, and we've got to see things for what they are and not get hung up in ideological confusion about what's really going on. Thank you.
And Brother Anthony, one of the things in that message, getting up and standing up, Marley attacked the establishment of organized religion and the various kind of con games that are being used to manipulate people and oppress the people. What is your response to that call of not critiquing organized religion for what it really is and how it has been used to oppress the people and humanity?
I think Bob Marley made a correct observation that religion has been used, religion in general, Christianity in particular, has been used to placate African people. And a lot of us do believe that God is going to come down from the sky and make everybody feel high if we follow what the preacher says on Sunday and just read the Bible. But it's a misinterpretation of Christianity, because there's more to Christianity than just listening to the preacher on Sunday and reading the Bible. It's the key to understand the lessons that the Bible teaches and apply them to your own situation. And a lot of our people aren't at that level where they understand it, so they're easily placated by religion. And that is one of the major factors that's keeping us, disorganized. In the sense that we're really not, we do rote memorization, but we really don't understand the lessons of our history in order to apply them well enough in order to apply into our present circumstances, which means that it starts with us internalizing the fact that we're human beings with the same rights as any other human being on this earth, because all of us are creatures of God ultimately. And that is not being well understood by people. And that's why you have this, we blame ourselves. We think there's some defect with us. It's the fact that we are not organized and we don't have a sense of our history and what we contributed to society as human beings that's holding us back.
You gotta listen to Missing Pages of History. What we're gonna do right now, we're gonna go to our next record, and we will come back with Brother Mikhail and Brother Maurice. We will ask them to address the issue of why Michael Jackson chose to articulate the statement, "They don't care about us," the way that he did it. And we'd like to have your feedback, your discussion as well. You can reach us at 818-337-0016. We say we must get up and stand up for our rights. And Michael later on came behind Molly and produced this.
All I want to say is that they don't really care about us.
Don't worry, people say. We know the truth.
All I want to say is that they don't really care about us.
Enough is enough of the story.
Is they don't care about us. When you are a writer, when you are an architect, you produce things for certain reasons. You give it its essence, its form, and you direct it towards a particular audience. Brother McCall, for a man to be a multi-millionaire who has traveled the world and lived a life of a lifetime, what is your synopsis of the message that Michael Jackson was trying to convey to the world and to his people when he wrote the theme in the song, All I Want to Say Is That They Don't Care About Us?
Okay. I think he's pretty upfront about what he's talking about. This is a person who started as a young person and was heavily involved in, completely overrun by the music industry. You watched his transformation. He went through a lot, some of which I don't always agree with, but he's telling you exactly what goes on within the industry and what goes on within the industry is going on within the larger society in general. But I'd like to take 1 second to go back to Bob. What Bob Marley was talking about is very crucial. It's not just the get up, stand up. He used a couple lines in there referring to Mighty God being a living man. And I think that's a key component in terms of religion and how we relate to each other. The idea, let's say, take Psalms 82, and they talk about the gods being unjust. Who were those gods? And what was that made them unjust? And in some interpretations, they will say that our ancestors were being spoken of in that particular verse or that particular line. But the idea of being, I think the way that particular psalm ends or that particular section of the psalm ends, it talks about that ye will die like mortals, even though that you are actually gods. So till you get your God self back in terms of how you visualize yourself and how you relate to the rest of the planet, you're going to be under somebody's teaching or under somebody's control because you're not your full self. But back to Michael Jackson, my take on him is that he went through the industry, and within the industry, there are certain ethnic groups that control certain aspects of it, and corporately, you're under control, and the corporation is beholden to its board of directors, its stockholders, not to anybody, any people, or their welfare. Okay.
Thank you. Brother Moses?
Yeah, let me get in on that. The mighty God is a living man. Basically, throughout history, people have been trying to subjugate people by using God as you know, the divine right of kings, whatever. And so Bob Marley is saying that basically these teachings are not God, but human beings who are teaching them. And they can be changed, they can be fought, and they can be struggled against. Michael Jackson recognized the prison industrial complex and what was going on, and to the schools, to the prison pipeline, and because if you watch the video, it's definitely about prisoners above the other things, and that the state, the government doesn't really care about us, but we're just, workers that are enslaved, and the system has a reserve army of labor within the prison system and on the streets of unemployment, and there's no humanity in the system. It doesn't care about us at all. It's just profit driven. I'll leave it right there. Thanks.
Okay. We have only a few minutes left. We are in the process of closing this particular episode of Missing Pages of History for Brother Haki Anthony and Brother Maurice. Can you give me just your summation of 1 minute or less in terms of the message that Mike was trying to convey to the world when you made the song, "They Don't Care About Me, Care About Us"? Start with you, Brother Haki.
Yeah, in a nutshell, I think he was saying there's a system in place which ensured the oppression of African people, and he did a video in Brazil to illustrate that point.
Okay. Brother Anthony?
Yes, I concur. I mean, I think he was indirectly talking about the system of capitalism that cares more about things than about people, and particularly African and other oppressed people of the world. You know, the system does not care about us. So it's something that we should rise up against.
And it's definitely something that he's showing on a daily basis, historically. And last but not least, we bring in Susan, your thoughts on Michael Jackson's song, They Don't Care About Us, Susie.
I think what he was doing, this was, not only was it nationally, internationally known or whatever, but he was venting, and I think Michael was trying to tell us a way. He know they don't care about us, but what he was doing was letting us get a feel for what he was coming out after that record was done, just like he did Man in the Mirror. I think he was trying to give us some kind of insight or way his thought and his process of learning going through the industry and everything, what it was really about. But this was just his breakaway to really address those issues.
And last but not least, Maurice, your response to the record, 1 minute less.
Okay. Basically, all of the panelists touched on the main points that the video was shot in Brazil, that he was touching on military crackdown, KKK war crimes. But I also just want to, real briefly, for the remainder of my 30 seconds, I want to touch on his other videos. Remember the time when he highlighted black Africans portraying Egyptians, the original Egyptians, and also the black and white video when he did a nod to the Black Panthers when he transformed himself into a Black Panther, the animal, and blew the white man in the sky out of his living room in the intro of the video. And also the Earth song when he talked about the importance of land in the complex when we related to imperialism. That is, thank you.
Yeah, we'd like to thank all the participants today on this show, and we'd like to thank always our listening audience and remind you that missing pages of history. Missing pages of history, that's right. We are filling our missing pages. You can hear us every other week. Our next program will be on the 27th, but we will have a special program next weekend on April 15th as we will conduct our quarterly rapid drawing contest. You can tune in at 1 p.m. Like always, we ask you to come and join us, help build our organization, because by helping build our organization, you are playing a crucial role in helping us to improve our communities. You can find out more about Missing Pages History by going to www.mphin.org. Until next time, we ask you to just always strive to go forward ever and backwards never, and we can do this by helping us to feel Missing Pages of History. We'll see you on that special program next Saturday at 1 p.m. Until next time, let's go home to Tennessee.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. My God, he forced the truth. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Country and into more countries, baptized birth into rhythm, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb. the trees my forefathers come from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. My brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. You said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth and you was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason it had to be. It was all